Hey everyone, welcome back to Courtroom Chronicles with the County Attorney. As usual, we have County Attorney Kent Volkmer here, and we have an esteemed guest on the show today, Sheriff Mark Lamb.
Well, I appreciate the esteemed part. I would say we could just go with guest.
A guest? Yeah, Sheriff, I appreciate you coming.
Honorable, I would do that too. Whatever.
It's like whatever works. No, Sheriff, I appreciate you taking the time. What we're talking about today is something it's obviously in the news all the time. We see it here a lot, just the rise in the number of fentanyl cases. Just, I guess we'll start with you, Sheriff, just contextualize what all the deputies are seeing out there and how big of a problem is this becoming?
Look, fentanyl is becoming a problem across the country, and Arizona is not immune from it. Mm-hmm. Now, Arizona still has a greater problem with methamphetamine, and partly mm-hmm. because of how our proximity to the border. We certainly seize more fentanyl mm-hmm. pills in Arizona than what they do throughout the rest of the country. To give you an idea, the DEA in Arizona, last year the DEA total seized 78 million fentanyl pills. 45 million of those were here in Arizona. So Arizona is carrying the lion's share of those fentanyl seizures, only to be surpassed by California, but that's large in part because of the ports. So when they bring in these big containers, they tend to get a spike in their numbers. But consistently trafficked fentanyl is right here in Arizona, so we become that jumping off point, and we see a lot of it right here in our own county.
And Kent, we'll get more into it in a little bit, but I mean, we're also seeing a huge uptick in the number of cases we're prosecuting.
Yeah, so I mean, look, these are the numbers. In 2019, we prosecuted 9 fentanyl cases. In 2020, that number jumped to 52. In 2021, it tripled to 150. In 2022, it doubled from there to 300. And then in 2023, it almost doubled again. So we went from 9 in 2019 to 582 cases in 2023.
Wow. And you know, that correlates with what we've seen at the sheriff's office, just our sheriff's office, Pinal County Sheriff's Office, which we comprise of about half of the law enforcement in the county. We went from 0 M30 fentanyl pill seizures in 2018 to 700 fentanyl pill seizures in 2019. We went to over 200,000 in 2020. We went to 1.2 million in 2021 and 1.4 million in 2022. So to see those types of numbers, it correlates with the same mm-hmm. thing that we're seeing. The amount of fentanyl we're seizing has gone through the roof.
And I don't want to just assume everybody knows. I mean, where is this all coming from, and what's behind this year-over-year surge in this issue?
Money. I mean, look, the cartels are making money off of it. The cartels have gone from making $500 million a year to $13 billion. A lot of that is on human trafficking. But with that comes an increase in the amount of drug trafficking that's coming into America. They're making so much money off of it, and the supply is so great here in this country. We saw the cost of fentanyl pills drop down to as low as 10 cents a pill here in Arizona. It's back at about 50 cents a pill, but that shows you how much supply is in the market, and that's coming from the southern border. And frankly, the precursors for the fentanyl is coming from China. China is putting it in the hands of cartels. Cartels are putting it into pill form typically, and then bringing it into America and into the hands of our loved ones.
And the issue is, like you said, it's 50 cents. I mean, I can't go next door to buy a Big Mac for less than almost $6. For that same $6, I could get 12 fentanyl pills. I mean, it is just so cheap that there's really nobody that can't afford that. And that's becoming really dangerous because now it's starting to spill into our youth as well.
Yeah, and these thousands of pills that are coming in, I mean, where are they going in our community?
Everywhere. I mean, look, they go everywhere. This is not a drug that's like for poor people on the street or a certain demographic or people that live in projects or people that live in rich neighborhoods. It has literally become a drug because it's pill form typically. It has become a drug that I've seen wealthy people use, elderly, young people, women, men. It transcends all of it. And I think that's concerning as well, to see just how much it's affected. I personally, as my family was affected by it. I'm the sheriff. So I think it's the big problem is that it is transcending all demographic platforms, racial platforms, economic status. It is going into everybody's homes.
And what because I don't want to assume that everybody knows. So let's just start here. What makes it so deadly? And you just touched on it. It's not. There are people who don't even know they're taking fentanyl, right? That might accidentally end up ingesting it because it's kind of mixed into a lot of different things all over the place.
So the thing that we didn't talk about is really what is fentanyl and why does it exist? The reality is fentanyl was initially created as a legitimate medical drug. It was for people at end stages of, you know, death, mm-hmm. like they're on hospice, they're dying, they've got cancer, their body's being ravaged. So the medical community came up with this medication, this opioid that takes away that pain. I mean, that's the purpose. And for every good use, it has a sort of converse or opposite use, and it frankly makes people feel good. It's dirt cheap, and it makes them feel great. So it's going everywhere.
And by everywhere, I know we've even done some work with some moms who've lost kids to fentanyl. The kids thought that they were buying a Xanax or oxycodone, and it seems like fentanyl. I mean, is it just mixed in? How is it getting mixed into everything now?
They are mixing it into everything. They're putting it in marijuana, heroin, methamphetamine. They're putting it into everything. Why? Because they want to increase addictability to the products that they're selling your first time you use it. And it's so cheap. It's so cheap that 1 kilo of fentanyl powder, which, by the way, we had a I'll tell you the story just real quick. We had a guy, we got a tip that there was a guy in Arizona City selling fentanyl powder, that he was shipping it in the mail. And so we did a surveillance on it. Sure enough, he shows up to the post office, drops off a package. We then go in after he leaves, we intercept the package, and it was 1 kilo of fentanyl powder. So then the next day we served 2 warrants. We served one on a house in Eloy and one in Arizona City. And we recovered 2 more kilos of fentanyl powder and 6 kilos of cocaine. That 1 kilo of fentanyl will make 1 million fentanyl pills. And so it's so cheap for them to put this powder in it. What makes it so deadly is this is not a lab. This isn't Pfizer. This isn't Johnson & Johnson. These are makeshift labs in the middle of nowhere in Mexico predominantly, where they're mixing things in and using the same vats. And there is no rhyme or reason. So that's why 75% of fentanyl pills now are deadly doses.
Yeah, and Kent, I know the sheriff maybe just exactly answered that question, but a question we get a lot even is like, well, why? I know a lot of community members ask, well, why would the cartels or something want to kill their clients? Why are there so many overdoses? Like, why it doesn't make good business sense to kill off your clients?
So two things. One, I mean, a lethal dosage, if you don't have any tolerance buildup, is like the equivalent of 2 grains of sand. So think how little that is. So you have to be very exacting to make sure that there's not too much. When the FDA makes drugs, it's stirred like a minimum of 1,000 times. They have these giant vats. Everything is very precise. It's medically cleared. That's not what's happening, what we're seeing south of the border. But the other thing is the idea of tolerance. So what happens is, I'd like everybody to think, if you've ever drank a beer, the first time you drank a beer, you were probably drunk. But the next time you drank, you needed a beer and a half to get that same feeling. And then you needed 2, then you needed 3. Or if you smoke cigarettes or do anything, the human body's amazing. We have this ability to build up a tolerance. But what comes with tolerance is you're always chasing that high. So what happens is the cartel is trying to meet the demands of their clients, and their clients want to get high. So they have to add more and more and more. So you combine this sort of inexact, you know, unregulated science with this human desire to chase that ultimate high, and it's a deadly combination.
Yeah, and 2 points to parlay off of what Kent said, because Kent's exactly right. The other 2 points is that these guys, the fentanyl that they're using, well, the one point I want to make is they don't really care. The cartels don't care about people. You're assuming that there's a set of regulations and restrictions that exist for illegal drugs. They don't. That's one of the points. The second point is there are still more drug users every day than what die. And so the business model, as long as it's kind of like a lot of these other big businesses, as long as you're still making profits and those profits are increasing and meeting their goals, they're not going to change their business model. And if they lose some customers along the way, they're still gaining more customers.
Now, obviously, we can't solve the problem everywhere. And Kent, I'll have you jump in a second. But Sheriff, start with you. Just, I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, okay, well, what are we doing about it in Pinal County? What are your deputies doing? How many resources are allocated to trying to track down as many pills and offenders as we can.
Well, look, I have an anti-smuggling unit. I've got canines that are completely dedicated to interdicting. They interdict humans that are being trafficked, and they interdict the drugs that are being trafficked. They also interdict on the back end the guns that are going back to Mexico and the money that's going back to Mexico. But to answer your question, we expend a lot of resources trying to stop these drugs, not just from coming into our community. We happen to be a pass-through county. So anything that comes across the southern border at some point is going to make its way through Pinal County to get to Phoenix, where that is the distribution point. And so we work very hard to make sure that we're taking as many drugs off the street as possible. But there's also programs outside. We're doing a reentry program. We have a juvenile redirection program. We've got all these programs, but I will tell you the programs are good, but they're not the answer, because that's like putting, you're treating the symptom and you're not treating the problem. And so what we're doing is, it's like we're mopping the bathroom floor, but we don't turn off the tub water. When we turn off the tub water is we have to stop it at its source, where it's coming into America, and that's border security, which is why I'm such a proponent of it, because it's not about necessarily keeping people out. That's one piece of it. But it's about keeping drugs out of the hands of our loved ones as well.
And give us a sense on how are your guys able to track down some of these vehicles out on the road? I mean, what are they looking for? And not to give you a two-part question, or I guess I am, but one of the things I think about, and you all do a great job, if we see all these huge busts, right, and thousands of fentanyl pills, my mind initially goes to, man, we're able to catch a lot of it. Think about of all the ones we're not able to catch.
Well, we don't do profiling, that's for sure. It's just guys.
Good answer.
Yes, right. Training and experience. Yeah. Really, that's it. These guys have been doing it so long. They train. They know what kind of little things you look for. Body, just as they drive by at 80 miles per hour, the deputies can look at body language. Obviously, we have to have a reason for the stop, probable cause. Some of them are what's called whisper stops. Some of them, you get information from other agencies saying, hey, be on the lookout for this. But a lot of these are honestly what we call cold stops, which means that the deputy had no idea that vehicle had the drugs. And when you pull that car over, you start to ask questions and really kind of figure out how they're answering your questions as to whether or not they might be carrying some illegal product, in this case, drugs, into it. So, I mean, really the way they get good at it is just training and experience, doing it over and over again, finding what little things there are. And believe it or not, these drug dealers, they have a way of doing their business. And one more thing too, they're like Walmart. Unless you affect it, Walmart might have, and I don't mean to use Walmart as an example within the context of drugs. It's just everybody knows Walmart.
You're going to get a call from the CEO. Yeah.
Walmart has or any big business has an acceptable loss margin, which means damaged or stolen goods. As long as it stays within a certain range, they're not going to change their business model. Why? Because they've built it into their business model. The cartels are billion-dollar businesses. They, too, have a built-in loss margin that they're willing to accept. We've heard it's around 20%. So the fact that they're not changing the way that they're doing things tells you that we're probably not even hitting their 10 to 20% at best is what we're hitting them.
And Kent, when we go to prosecute these cases, who are we prosecuting? I mean, is it, that's a big picture question, but I mean, is it the people who ultimately end up with it? Is it people in the middle, or how high up are we able to get?
So generally we're not getting the people at the top. We just really aren't there. Unfortunately, what we see a lot of times is there are people that are just willfully ignorant, that are driving, that know they're doing something they're not supposed to, but they sort of use the ostrich defense. They bury their head in the sand. They don't ask any questions. They'll go pick a vehicle up. They'll drive a vehicle from point A to point B. And oftentimes we believe that they really don't know what's in there. Sometimes it'll be a mother who's been offered money, like, hey, take this vehicle. Here's $1,000 in cash. You've got kids. Drive up to Mills Mall in Tempe. Drop the vehicle off. Go shopping. Come back out, and then you can return. You have $1,000 worth of stuff.
No questions asked. Yeah.
Right. It's one of those where they're going after those type of people, or a lot of times it's young kids. Very rarely are the people that we really want to target caught red-handed. Again, they're a sophisticated business model, which is, again, why just incarcerating our way isn't the answer. You know, you'd asked the question earlier, you know, how are we addressing it? Look, these guys are busting their humps day in, day out, doing everything they can to pull these drugs off the road. But there's also a second component, and that is demand reduction. You can't have one with the other without the other. In our society, we love to say, oh, there's a single solution, or we want to swing to these extreme reaches, as opposed to taking a common sense approach. So what we try and do is really work on demand reduction. So, you know, those people that have addiction issues, throwing them in our prison, probably not going to really help us out. It's a consequence, but ultimately, addicts don't make good decisions. People that are fiending for these drugs don't make rationed good decisions. In fact, when they sober up, they look back and oftentimes say, what an idiot that I was. So we really look at these demand. He alluded to it when we talked about the reentry program. We talk about our probation programs, which are phenomenal. We have mm-hmm. community service providers where we're trying to deal with the underlying addiction. We have to hit it from both sides if we really want to get to the root and address the underlying problem.
And you brought up, you know, maybe we're not always able to get to the very top of the food chain. That's because, I mean, these people are in Mexico or some other country.
Well, can
right?
I tell they're, you they're one pretty, of the big yeah. problems is because they're using social media platforms to recruit Americans. I testified in Congress and I kept hearing politicians saying, well, these are Americans. And I said, look, you say that as if this makes it okay. Mm-hmm. No, it's not okay. It should actually be more concerning that we now have transnational criminal organizations, cartels, that are paying and engaging American citizens, and sometimes as young as 12 years old, to traffic, to drive either people or drugs into our communities. And so when Kent talks about us, our inability to work these cases up is large in part because of the amount of money they have, the ability for them to contract and engage American citizens who really don't have a place in that organization. They just happen to be the driver. They're getting paid a certain amount. It's given them the ability to do that. And that makes our investigations hard because we hit a certain point. And it's really, we can't go past that, and it's very tough to take the big players down.
Well, and look, I did a lot of stupid things when I was, under 18 that we won't talk about on the podcast. But, I mean, look, you talk
like
about—
you open the door. This is like court. Once you open the door, you've been, right?
But you talk about young kids who, hey, you know, on social media, they're offered a few $1,000 to go drive a vehicle or whatever it might be, something that seems maybe a little risky but a little innocuous because they don't know any better. I mean, I'm sure it's really tempting to a lot of our youth to say, hey, I could use a few $1,000.
It's not just tempting to our youth. We had a lady that we caught was from Chandler, had a $55,000 car, brand new car, mm-hmm. nice, normal looking lady that just could be your neighbor. We've also had them fly in from other states. We had a lady we flew in from California, rented a car on Tuyo, or what is it?
Turo.
Yeah. Rented a car on Turo, went down, picked up some illegals, was going to have a payday, and we stopped her on the way back. But this is, they rent the cars, they come in, they pick them up, and they go back. So yes, this is very enticing, not just to kids. It's enticing to regular common folk who just want to make some extra bucks.
Man, we're name dropping all sorts of private companies.
I know, they're going to be like, what the heck?
But we talked about the importance of demand reduction and kind of what the county is doing, and doing a great job at trying to provide a lot of resources. But on that supply side, and look, there's no way to ask this question without it becoming inherently a political question. But I mean, how do you address the supply side? How do you get that portion of it? I guess you're never going to completely solve the issue, but how do you fix it to a certain extent?
No, but methamphetamine per ounce was much more expensive than it is now. I mean, that goes to a supply and demand issue. It's business 101. Anytime the cost of goods goes down, it means there's a lot of supply in the market. And we have to reduce the supply, increase the cost, which will inevitably reduce some of the demand. Because then, you know, especially with kids, we've made it so attainable for kids with it being so cheap. That's a real problem because we're developing addicts. And not only that, it's not like heroin or meth. This is fentanyl, which is far more addictive. And so we're getting addicts built at a much younger age because of the cost and the availability of the product. So for me, it's closing the border, securing the border. It's making sure that we're stopping as much of this as possible at the ports of entry, at the border, and keeping it from coming into our country. You're right, you can't stop it all, but it will certainly help the demand, the supply level, and hopefully reduce the demand.
Yeah, Kent?
So, Sheriff, I think one of the things that you talked about with the attractiveness to youth being the cost, it's also how easy it is to ingest or imbibe this. Mm-hmm. You know, methamphetamine, you have no choice but to smoke it. You have to have a pipe. So you have to have this paraphernalia that your parents can very easily find or your neighbors could find.
And it's stigmatic,
too. Oh, absolutely. Think about, injecting. If you're taking black tar heroin, you're injecting it. There's needles. You need all these things. Fentanyl pills, the tiny little M30s, I mean, they look like breath mints. You could have them in an Altoids container. In fact, they're smaller than Altoids. They're just so small, the stigma doesn't exist. You could pop one in your mouth, nobody would know the difference. I mean, they're smaller than a Tylenol or an ibuprofen. So what happens is we've made it cheap, we've made it easily attainable, there's not much stigma associated with it, and quite frankly, you can get them, you alluded to it earlier, off social media. I mean, you can go to Instagram or any of these, you can have it hand-delivered for dirt cheap to your house, and really, you could take it while you're at school. You could take it at any given time while you're working and help you zone through stuff, just zone out. So it is a perfect storm that we're combating right now.
And I know both of you are doing everything you can to try to address this, but what is the message to parents who are wondering, well, you know, what can I do? Or this is never going to affect my family. Like, what is the message to families, to parents, who, you know, those who I just alluded to, who may even think, oh, you know, my kid, this would never affect my kids. This would never hit home for us. What's the message to them?
Look, I went through it on a personal level. You know, one of my sons got into drugs, and ultimately, you know, we found out fentanyl was involved. And look, we tried to do everything. You try to get on his phone. You try to do everything you can, you know, and you try to teach him right things. But ultimately, I remember years later when he got clean, my wife asked him, you know, what could we have done different? And honestly, he said nothing. You know, there wasn't anything you could have done more. I was going to do what I was going to do. What we created was a loving atmosphere for him to come home to. Now, I'm not saying raise the white flag. I think you should still check your children's phones. Be very aware of who your children's friends were. That was the biggest sign to us that our son was on the wrong path, his friends. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we tried to do what we could. Be involved in your kids' lives, too. That's not the end-all, be-all. But these are all little things that will help that relationship and hopefully reduce any desire for drugs. But I mean, look, you could do everything right. And frankly, it's everybody lives their own life. And our children, unfortunately, are their own people. Sure. And some of them go down their own path. Sure.
You know, the old saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I really think that's what we need to focus on. You know, you'll see the slogans, you'll see them on the side of the roads, you'll see them on the billboards. One pill can kill, one and done. There's all of these sort of pithy sayings. I would just ask you to take that moment to have the conversation with your kids. It may not ultimately make a difference, but it might. And just to take that moment, it's worth it. You know, I've got a chief of police here in our community that likes to say, instead of having one 60-minute conversation with your kid, have 61-minute conversations with your kid. Just constantly reminding them that you're there, you love them, but also just the danger of getting involved. You know, I would tell our, you know, listeners to think about when you were a kid. You know, if you went out when you were 18 and you snuck a beer, or 16 you snuck a beer, or maybe, you know, heaven forbid, you took a drag on a joint, the worst thing that's going to happen is your parents are going to find out, and if you're anything like me, you're going to get beat. Like, that was what was going to happen. You're going to be embarrassed publicly, and you're going to get beat. The difference today is that same dumb decision, that same, hey, I'm just going to, you know, do this because I'm rebelling a little bit, could cost them their lives. Yeah. And I think reminding them that's vital.
We had in 2021, Arizona lost 33 children to fentanyl poisonings. Seven of them were under the age of one. So it doesn't even have to be consumed. It can be, parents can be even in possession of it, or somebody else, and the child could get, just be in the vicinity of it. It has a real negative effect on us. And just so you understand where we're at as a county, the sheriff's office, we had 81 fatal opioid deaths last year. We're still waiting for the final number of how many of those were fentanyl poisonings, but it typically comes in about 75%. So we expect that number to land somewhere between 60 and 65 of those opioid deaths. And we issued 300 Narcan issues last year as well. So almost daily we're issuing Narcan to save somebody else's life.
So yeah, your deputies, I mean, that fatal number could have been a lot higher if not for the work of your men and women.
Right. And one thing that's concerning too is parents, you should be on the, teach your children. There's a new drug that's coming out. We're not sure how much it's going to take off, but it's currently making its way as xylazine, which is a non-opioid, synthetic opioid. There is zero human use. Like Kent talked earlier about the human use for fentanyl. There is no human use for xylazine. It's a horse tranquilizer. The problem with xylazine is it is more powerful than fentanyl, but it is impervious to Narcan and naloxone, which are both counter agents to the what happens in a fentanyl poisoning. So you could give somebody this. It would counteract the fentanyl on board, but it wouldn't counteract the xylazine, and you could still end up losing somebody. So just there's more and more stuff coming out every day. The best thing is an ounce of prevention, you know, is really the key here. So
yeah, it's crazy. You catch up on one drug, and then another drug comes down the pipeline.
Cartels.
Yeah. The only thing I would tell you is I don't know that we ever truly catch up. You know, the sheriff alluded to it earlier. We still have more methamphetamine fentanyl. So what happens is these highly potent, highly addictive drugs, once people use them, unfortunately, some people, just their body chemistry, one use, and they're hooked. And we don't have the tools to fix it. Law enforcement will do everything we can to keep you safe. We'll do everything we can to hold people accountable, to give people a pathway to redemption. But at the end of the day, we can't fix this problem. Only you can.
That's right. Yeah. And certainly appreciate you both touching on the demand reduction and all the resources that we have and are offering to try to address that demand problem, the demand component to this, and really help those who are struggling with addiction. Anything else I missed from either of you?
No, we just appreciate you doing this. You know, we've really tried to connect with mothers that have lost loved ones, families that have lost loved ones. I mean, I think the message that hopefully you took away from today is, look, this is a real problem. It's unfortunately readily available, and the best thing that we can do is be better as a society to reduce the demand for these drugs. And I would love nothing more than to put the cartels completely out of business from trafficking humans and drugs into this country. And while we're trying to do the best we can, it still is incumbent upon society to find our moral compass as well. So
the last thing I just want to add is Arizona does have the Good Samaritan law. If you find yourself embroiled in this, you find your kids involved with this, do not be afraid to call law enforcement. We care about you first and foremost. We care about keeping you alive more than we care about prosecuting. So if you need help, please. We'll put some numbers up at the end of this. So if you're suffering from addiction, there'll be 1-800 numbers and websites and some resources. If you or your family need it, please click on the links, make the phone call. Worry about keeping you alive first. We'll worry about the consequences later.
No, really, really good add-on there. And I appreciate, Sheriff, your time, both of your time. I mean, this is invaluable information that we're going to put out to the community. And it's important that everyone kind of, because this changes by the month. So it's important that we kind of keep everyone informed. And Sheriff, I appreciate your time, and we'll route any.
Thank you for putting big books in front of me as if I read them, you know, like, and all these other books behind us, like, we're.
Well, well, and I was going to say, too, we'll route any complaints from company presidents over to the sheriff's office.
Hey, it was
we'll
all just to put things into perspective. I love Walmart. I shop there all the time.
All right. Well, with that, Sheriff, I appreciate the time. County Attorney Volkmer, I appreciate the time. And thank you to everyone who watched or listened to this. And we'll see you next time on Courtroom Chronicles with the County Attorney.